Camper Van Beethoven joined me recently in the World Cafe Studios for a very fun session looking back at the band's beginnings in the 80s, but also concentrating on their current concept album called New Roman Times. I started off by acknowledging that the members of the band had certainly gone through some changes since they broke up 15 years ago. This is not picking up where you left off. This is picking up 15 years later.
Yes.
And I think, Jonathan, you echoed those thoughts, too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we've all been making music in all different ways and continuing to evolve, I think.
You evolved?
We did not ignore our past. Yeah. I think reunion records tend to not be regarded very well by their fans or the critics, right? And we sort of analyzed that. We put the actuaries to work at Camper Van Beethoven headquarters there.
World headquarters.
And they analyzed some stuff, and they came up with the fact that there's two ways to do a reunion record.
Yes.
That have failed, and that is to pick the, you know, what people tell you was your critical and commercial peak of your career, and then to
emulate,
that. Or either to say, well, we've got to do a record that's now. And so what we tried to do is go, well, let's just, essentially, we have been a band because we have interacted in the intervening 15 years. And we've listened to lots of other bands in the last 15 years. We've had our own bands in the last 15 years. And so we drew upon our earlier records for inspiration. We drew upon those 15 years we were apart in our solo projects. And we played together for a good 4 years off and on to reestablish our rapport before we made this record. We would have liked to have done it sooner, but, you know, it just took a while to
get it. So we had to have a couple of studio practice sessions as well to see if we could actually record.
Like, for instance, Tusk. That we released false documents saying,
but there were
that
clues.
Disinformation, that, I think.
Disinformation, yeah. Saying that was actually recorded in 1987, but we... but we actually recorded it as a practice session to start this session.
The jackalope on the cover should have given it away.
Yeah, yep. The art direction should have given it away, but I actually started to believe it after a while. You tell a lie over and over again, then you were actually there. And
well, yeah, look at certain
just
clicks
look at certain,
in power,
yeah,
right,
exactly,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
this new album is indeed, there's a concept. There's actually quite a story. It is, I could even call it a rock opera. But it's interesting that you're going to begin with a song that strikes me as a song you just wanted to put in here, because I can't follow this song in the story
at
all.
Oh, but it fits. Oh, yes, it does.
Oh, yeah?
But,
oh, yeah?
But we,
sell me
we
on this.
Decided at one point that this record would not be... The narrative wouldn't be so literal that you could follow the story without, like, a libretto or
right.
something like that. And we actually have... Me and Jonathan exchanged all these emails, and we built a deep background to this whole thing.
We built an entire alternative United... Well, non-United States.
No, an alternative
should we
North
set that
America.
Up before we start? Should we set up the background?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
What it is it's... We just... We, as a critic recently called it, we used the lowest form of science fiction to establish our story here, which is, sort of alternate history science fiction. So this is set in, say, the late 60s or the 70s in a North America that has a map that looks much more like South America, where you have all these different countries. Texas is probably the most dominant.
Kind of subdivides the middle of the country.
So the story follows a young soldier in the Army of Texas, and Texas is a theocracy, sort of a semi-democratic authoritarian theocracy, sort of like Iran,
mm-hmm.
a Christian one. And California is a very sort of secular, liberal, free sort of state or whatever, but they have this sort of authoritarian government, and there's a lot of unrest, and this eventually, through a lot of stuff, this soldier ends up there. And so we tell the story through the soldier's eyes, but there's two or three people that narrate parts of the story, and the Gum You Like Is Back in Style is an element of the story we could never fit into the narrative very well. And what it is that we're total geeks. We're fascinated by cryptology. I was a math major. The armies and the resistance groups and all of that are using this form of encryption that's based on the difference between people's lives in one universe to another. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to take minor celebrities, because there's some information available
yeah.
on them, but not too much, and compare their lives, build this encryption on the differences between their lives between the two universes. So hence you have an obscure band in this world called the Beatles, but it includes John, Paul, Ringo, and Keenan Wynn, and there's no George in it and stuff like that. And this cryptologist is singing this song, and or telling the story in this song, and he just happens to be an obscure English, you know, sort of psychedelic group that he likes. But this, you know, there are clearly parallels between today's politics and today's war and today's administration. And those, of course, were intended, but what we were trying to get at with this record, we were more fascinated between this so-called division between the red and the blue of us, and which is very odd, because if we were so divided, like half my family wouldn't speak to each other. I think it's actually an artificial divide. And, you know, this goes back to, you know, Roman times, I suppose, that, you know, the rulers have always figured out, have always used this technique to rule over the ruled by dividing them against each other. And that's sort of what we're fascinated with this record is, oh, you're either, you know, you're either a God-fearing Christian or you're not, you know. And we wanted to exaggerate this divide. And this was in 2002, and we were pretty much in the wilderness at that time, coming up saying that we're going to do a concept record based on this, because, you know, I mean, there were very few people sort of, we were all sort of afraid of being blacklisted or something like that.
You for know? The and concept few, record idea or just?
Well, just for taking some sort of stance that could be seen as anti-war or anti...
That's true. 2002 felt different than 2004 does.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what it
is. So this is the...
but it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be dark. This is more... It's less Tommy, and
with
it's
that
more
kind of
200 motels, okay? It's more Zappa than it is The Who.
Absolutely.
So, and yes, you're right. This song is the hardest one to figure out, but we had to stick it in there, so, okay?
Here you go.
again. Haven't seen you for a while, my friend. That
Kevra Van Beethoven are playing live, and that is That Gum You Like is Back in Style. Now, you're about to do a song that has direct kind of military thing going on with it called 51-7. Mm-hmm. And explain why you made the protagonist in this a soldier and where that
well,
comes
because
in.
I think that's the missing point in a lot of the critique of the war from both the left and the right is that the soldiers are out there doing all the dirty work. I have a strong military tradition in my family. My father was a 35-year military veteran. I just sort of have an empathy, and this is on the English and the Arkansas side of my family. Mm-hmm. My mother's English, my father's Arkansas, and I just have a sort of empathy and a sort of fascination with these guys. I know a lot of people who are active service. Active duty right now. I have a good friend who's a commander of a... I'm not sure if he's still a commander of a destroyer or another ship right now, but I'm going to leave his name out of this because...
The FBI will start looking.
He might have his career.
NCIS will start checking him out.
And so I wanted to tell the story this way. And really, I'm a quite lazy songwriter, and what I like to do is in a creative writing class in college, I was told that, well, you make good characters, but your stories aren't so good. Why don't you just let the characters talk and they'll tell their own story? Mm. So the first song that I really had for this whole record, it wasn't even a concept record yet. It's just, I wrote this song called 51-7 about sort of like, I imagined it was like one of my Texas or Arkansas cousins, you know, wanting to go and join the military. And but he was a good narrator. He's got a little bit of the unreliable narrator in the way he tells his stories, which is, I don't know if you know what the unreliable narrator is, but it's somebody who's not telling the truth, but you can read between the lines. They're sometimes telling the truth, but when they're not, you read between the lines and understand that they're actually lying. And so his voice was really good, and so he wrote 3 or 4 more songs for the record, like Might Makes Right. He of course, then later...
Hippie Chicks.
New Roman Times, Hippie Chicks, but that's after he makes his transformation. And Flower, of course.
Yeah, and, Flower.
You know, he just was the most engaging character, and so he got first billing.
People are reading a lot into 51-7.
Yes, everything. Apparently, there's
biblical,
a verse.
Yeah, biblical verse.
There's a biblical verse that, and it actually kind of fits. I don't remember exactly what it is. Also, somebody dug up a form for asylum that has apparently it's a 51-7 political asylum or something.
What? I have a friend who works at INS who can, in Detroit, we can verify that.
Okay, I think that's what it is. So anyway, there's a lot of interesting things. But 51-7 was supposed to be the elite military unit, right. You know, like an Army Rangers or Special Forces or Navy SEALs.
And this is one David wrote with Jonathan, 51-7.
I've been through all kinds of changes. Cut my head, dyed it black in stages. Been in trouble with the law, but that's all over now. I'm ready for the big time, 51-7.
Left home, don't think my five brothers ever noticed. Mom half baked on weed and Scientology. And my father, if I ever find, well, don't you never mind. I'm ready for the big time.
Kemper Van Beethoven, 51-7, is from New Roman Times. Well, there's our character in 51-7. David, take him to where he is in this next song, Might Makes Right.
Okay, well, this is a few songs later in the record, and he's has managed to join his elite military unit, and he's stationed somewhere in the Middle East, like a Gaza Strip or a Lebanon or something like that, and he's fighting some kind of police action or something over there. And he's really beginning to have doubts about what he's doing. He feels like he was misled into what he was doing in this place that he is.
bed's right. Yeah, my bed's right. They say that God is on our side and makes us mighty. Yeah, my bed's right. Yeah, my bed's right. They say that God is on our side. I don't believe them. I'm crawling through the underbrush. I'm teched up to the hilt. Compared to us, those poor guys should be wearing swords and kilts. I got a living, breathing shadow crossed up in my scope. My partner pulls the trigger, gives the signal, then the smoke. My bed's right. My bed's right. They say that God is on our side. He makes us mighty. Yeah, my bed's right. Yeah, my bed's right. They say that God is on our side. I don't believe them.
That's Might Makes Right from Camper Van Beethoven's new album, New Roman Times. More conversation and music with Camper coming up on The World Cafe. We're back talking with Camper Van Beethoven today on The World Cafe.
One of the things that putting this record out and going so high profile with Camper again, 15 years since you really put out a record, right?
Of new material.
And of course, there was a bunch of great collections that have come out recently. But 21 years since the band has formed, which is kind of scary when you think about that.
Tell me about it.
One of the things people try to do is kind of try to place Camper in musical history. Like you were a reaction to the rigidity of what was happening in punk music at the time.
Hardcore. That is true. But I will say this, that Maximum Rock and Roll, which was the Bible of punk rock at that time, declared that we were a punk rock band.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They reviewed at least the first two or three records and stuff like that. They declared we were a punk rock band. And about that time, what was happening is the Meat Puppets were throwing away, sort of the rigidity of hardcore, and the Minutemen were as well, and there were a few other bands doing stuff like that, and that was the essence of indie rock. But and also because so many punk bands play Take the Skinheads Bowling, I think we were originally a punk rock band that was then sort of the we were that transition in that transition right. to indie rock.
Who would show up at those shows first? I mean, when you started playing?
Well, some of the first shows that we did were with the Meat Puppets and the
Dead Kennedys.
Dead Kennedys immediately took a liking to us. I mean, we had cassette tapes out. I mean, we were getting cassette tapes reviewed in Maximum Rock and Roll.
It is 21 years ago.
About that time, also the psychedelic. Sort of the right. neo-psychedelic right. indie rock scene was developing
Rain
in L.A.
Rain Parade. Long Riders.
Long Riders and all of that stuff was happening in L.A. And we actually did one of those shows down there. And like Dave, what's the guy's name?
Dave Roback.
Yeah, stood on the side of the stage with his friends and laughed at us for being hippies. And said something in the show about how, you know, it's like, oh, pot smokers from, you know, Santa Cruz, pot smoking hippies from Northern California.
Yeah, how can they know what neo-psychedelia really is?
Yeah, you know. I was given a DVD of us playing live, opening for the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Liberty Lunch in Austin, Texas. It's like December 1985. Yeah. And we look, I mean, like, I have like a plaid wool shirt and really long hair. And Jonathan's wearing like this Maoist kind of costume.
But
standing
that's what
on
the
one
Meat
foot.
Puppets were wearing. And that's what the Minutemen were wearing, too.
It looks it really like we play much slower.
We weren't hippies. It was like
I was
we were
not
making
a Maoist.
We were fake hippies. It was part of the thing because most of our shows were with until like we started getting bigger shows like, you know, playing with Red Hot Chili Peppers. We were playing with hardcore punk rock bands. That's what we were doing.
Right,
we were
right.
playing with us. And I will tell you, anybody, you know, I see these bands sometimes, and I don't mean to rag on younger bands, but there's just nothing that they're doing that scares me and nothing that I think is really truly dangerous. I mean, play for 800, try playing in 1983 for 800 skinheads in a Chico.
It was like a
vet's hall or something.
With the Dead Kennedys for like 800 skinheads and go up there pretending to be hippies and doing sort of these hippie versions of like, you know,
we were standing outside
Clash songs and Black Flag songs and stuff like that. And about half the crowd wanted to kill us. But by the end, they all liked us. That would be the weird thing.
We were standing outside before that show drinking beer with the Dead Kennedys, and the cops were standing there with us. And I was like 18, and they didn't seem to care. They, you know, we were walking inside to play the show, and the cops looks at me and was like, "That's going to be really interesting inside."
That is funny.
One of my early impressions of being on the road.
Could you do skinheads?
I think that would be an appropriate thing to do right now.
Take the
People are dancing in their cars all over America.
Yay.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that indeed. You guys eventually ended up on a major label, and Pictures of Matchstick Man came out. Mm-hmm. A song I've always kind of enjoyed, but I always wanted to check this because I never actually asked any of you guys this. Was that song thrust upon you, or was that your
choice? No, we have played that probably since 1987.
I traded a test pressing of our third record to the guy at, what was it, OK's Corral in Madison for the single of that song out of the jukebox so that we could learn it.
Yeah. It was sort of a contest, I think.
Yeah, there was a healthy competition.
A healthy competition. There was sort of a contest between three Santa Cruz bands that we all played Pictures of Matchstick Men in our own way. I don't know why we all decided that's the weirdest song to ever get on the radio, you know?
It's a pretty bizarre, abstract kind of song.
Oh, to begin with, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, we play it live. It was a fan favorite. We're like, yeah, you know, this makes sense. Let's do it.
And it worked.
Yes, it did.
It worked in exactly the way it
is. I guess we should play that next.
Oh, then. I guess so. I guess that's where we're going.
Yeah.
most likely needn't tell you, but Kemper Van Beethoven are here in that Matchstick Men. What do you want to finish up?
I think we'd like to take the other sort of big radio song we had.
Oh, yeah. The one that gets the VH1 classic a lot, actually,
yeah,
strangely.
Classic. It's called Eye of Fatima.
Thank you.
Camper Van Beethoven, finishing up our session. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, David, for having us here on the World Cafe again.
And next time.
Whatever
conglomeration of musicians it may be.
Okay, thank you.